And when you've preached a sermon at one service, your notes get a bit sort of matted, if you know what I mean, and sort of all kind of jammed together. And you have to make sure, I was sat in the seat there, making sure they're actually in the right order. Because when you're doing the first sermon, you're kind of flipping through them and shoving one to the back and that. And I was thinking, well, you don't want it out of order, do you? Saying the end before the beginning. So, but this morning we're going to think about the transfiguration. Transfiguration. Now there is a word to conjure with, isn't it? To get your head around. You can find the transfiguration account in Matthew's Gospel, Mark's Gospel, Luke's Gospel. In fact, the three synoptic Gospels, as they're called. You can also find allusions to it, so the theologians say, in the beginning chapter of John's Gospel. And, of course, you find it in the second letter of Peter, which we had read to us today, where he recalls his experience on the mountain with Jesus. Well, let me ask you a question. Have you ever tried to explain the transfiguration to a non-Christian who has not read the New Testament? What happened? Why did it happen? How did it happen? What was its purpose? Well, I had the, I don't know if we call it a misfortune or opportunity, really. But I said at work, oh, I'm preaching on the Transfiguration in a week or so's time. And one of the chaps there said, oh, Transfiguration, did Jesus have Transfiguration? Yeah. Is that like martial arts then? Taekwondo. So I then proceeded to try and explain what the Transfiguration was. How Jesus had taken his disciples up the mountain and he'd started shining with light, and then Moses and Elijah had appeared and God had come and said his bit and all that. By the time I'd finished, they were kind of looking at me as if there was something wrong with me. Because, of course, if you don't understand the gospel story, and it's all out of context, isn't it? You don't understand how the transfiguration fits in, and you have no idea why it would ever happen, and it sounds a bit like some sort of weird thing from Hollywood. So, that was my experience this week of trying to explain it to somebody who had no idea about it. So what do we really understand about it? What do we really understand? And how powerful it was. Do we understand that? So let's start with the word transfiguration itself. Comes, of course, as you might expect, because the New Testament's written in Greek, from a Greek word. And it's a translation of a Greek word which we would now call metamorphosis. Okay? So our word metamorphosis comes from the Greek word that we translate transfiguration. How about that? Two big words to get your head around. A metamorphosis, basically, is what we would use it to describe, say, a caterpillar becoming a chrysalis that becomes a butterfly, changing from one state to another. Yeah. Now, in the first century, its meaning was more of a sort of transformation or a morphing from one state to another. So they would think of, say, a Roman god who came down to earth, changed into a man, and then changed back into a god, a sort of morphing thing. But the New Testament gives this word a much deeper, more subtle, changing type of meaning to the normal first century usage. And it shows us that the meaning of it is a change from the inside to the outside of a person. Okay. And it's graphically demonstrated, of course, in what happened to Jesus, the transforming of him from being looking normal to shining with light, inside to outside change, as he bursts forth in glory. Now, you might think, well, that's fantastic, Chris. Why would I want to know all that technical stuff anyway about metamorphosis and, you know, the difference in the Greek words and things. Well, actually, it's really significant. Because if you read the letters of Paul, you will find transformation all the way through them. Yeah? And the transfiguration echoes all the way down through Paul's letters and through the early church. Paul says this in Corinthians, "And we all, who with unveiled faces contemplate the Lord's glory, are being transformed into his image with ever-increasing glory, which comes from the Lord who is the Spirit." A complicated sentence. But basically he's saying, like Moses saw God without a veil on in the Old Testament, and his face glowed, so he had to put a veil on so he's scaring people. We are contemplating Jesus' glory without the veil on, and we are glowing, if you like, spiritually, and being transformed into his image with ever-increasing glory. Isn't that amazing? Which comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit. And I'm sure that Paul, when he was saying this, and many other passages about transformation, had the transfiguration in mind when he was talking about it. Changing from the inside to the outside with ever-increasing glory. That's what we should all be doing. Now, if it was difficult for me, and, you know, I'm supposed to be a sort of theologian, preacher, minister of the gospel, and I struggled to explain the transfiguration out of context to somebody who was completely non-Christian. So what must it have been like for Peter, James and John as Jesus takes them up the mountain? Because you imagine that, you know, they'd been up mountains with Jesus lots of times. He kind of took them up the mountain, maybe to get a bit of a sermon, like the Sermon on the Mount. And then he'd go off, find a rock, kneel down and pray. And they'd go off somewhere and have a snooze, fall, lie in the sun, whatever it was. And then he'd come back and they'd all back down the mountain. That's the kind of pattern of their lives sort of thing that they used to do. But this time, he takes them up the mountain, just like before. But all of a sudden, when he's doing the praying bit, everything changes. And he starts glowing with light, radiating light. And then the veil between heaven and earth dissolves. And there's Elijah, and there's Moses, and the light is surrounding them. And there's a bubble of heaven appeared on the mountain. And heaven has soaked into the reality of that mountaintop. Nobody told the disciples that it was Elijah and Moses. They just knew. That's the sort of thing that happens when you get integrated into heaven. Things just become kind of, you just start to know things. Ever experienced that? Maybe it's still to come for you. But it does. Believe me, it does. How mind-blowing would it have been for the disciples, do you think? This has never happened before. No one had experienced it before. No person had witnessed such a thing before. Peter, James and John were suddenly right in the middle of it, stuck there. There's no wonder, therefore, as I said in the first service, that Peter went a little bit wappy. Yeah? Kind of, oh, what do I do? Shall I build three booths that I would build at harvest time? One for you, one for him, one for him. He never got an answer to that question, by the way, because it was kind of overtaken by the further events of the happenings on top of the mountain. How would you have felt if you were there and this has never happened before and you were suddenly in the midst of it and jammed into heaven and all this light was going off? And wow, wouldn't that be a bit mind-blowing? I think the answer is yes, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. we wouldn't have understood what we were experiencing, would we? So there's no wonder that, you know, panic broke out with Peter, and he never gets his questions answered and things like that. It's a scary, powerful, overwhelming, spiritual event. And then it's an event, obviously, that Peter remembers well and writes about in his letters years later. Probably wrote Peter, by the way, when he was getting on for 60. So that's 30 years later. And then, of course, this whole event was taken to a whole new level, wasn't it? God the Father joined in. Big white cloud envelops everything. And God had turned up just to add his stamp to the occasion. Great cloud suddenly envelops the whole event. Now that is what you call a mountaintop experience. If you want one, then that's the kind of mountaintop experience to aim for, isn't it? You can't get any better than that. This is my son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him. Listen to him. So God the Father was repeating what he'd said at the baptism of Jesus. Confirmation that Jesus is the Son of God, who is loved by the Father, who has pleased the Father. Jesus did not count equality with his Father something to be held on to. He emptied himself. He became a man, a servant. And God says, listen to him. He is backed by me. Listen to him. This is my son. You know, the transfiguration is one of the key events in the ministry of Jesus. It's very similar to the crucifixion, the ascension, the resurrection. All these are key events, and the transfiguration is one of them. The transfiguration is a marker event, a pointer, if you like. It's where God says to Jesus, I'm well pleased with you. The direction you set is right. Continue towards the crucifixion. That's what the transfiguration is. God saying, okay, we're on track. Let's get on with it. Towards the crucifixion. Have you ever wondered why Jesus instructed his disciples that they would not share their experience of the transfiguration? Don't tell anyone what you have seen until the Son of Man has been raised from the dead. What a great witness it would have been for them to go down the mountain and say, wow, you should have seen what happened on that mountain. Jesus lit up like the sun. There was Elijah, there was Moses. God came and spoke. It was amazing, and heaven was all around. Don't tell anyone. Because the transfiguration, you see, was a lowering of the veil between heaven and earth. And it showed the power that God had, the power that would lead to him, to the resurrection happening, if you like. But the disciples didn't get that. We know that as the Gospels proceed. They didn't get the fact that Jesus was going to rise from the dead. Not until it happened. But despite that, in this event, God showed that he had the power to make resurrection happen. Because after all, there was Moses and there was Elijah, been gone for hundreds of years. Although Elijah didn't technically die. But there they were, alive. God has the power for resurrection. It's a fantastic event, the Transfiguration. One of those events that's amazing in the life of Jesus. It's one of those times when his sort of divine nature is allowed to show through. Just like the walking on the water, where he walked right across the Sea of Galilee, his kind of divine nature must have been showing through at that time. When he calmed the storm, everyone was amazed. His divine nature was kind of coming to the fore. And yet here we have an amazing event that, a little like the resurrection, only happens to Jesus. This radiating light in a sort of heavenly sort of bubble only happens to Jesus. As he is transformed from the inside out. And John 1 says to us this, the true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. Now the disciples actually physically saw this spiritual light at the Transfiguration. And we seem to think of it, we often think of it as a concept between light and darkness. But actually, the light of God, the spiritual light of God, is real. And it does blow away the darkness. And the disciples physically saw this. And that's what Jesus wants for us. He says, doesn't he, in Matthew, the first few chapters of Matthew, that we should shine like a lamp on a lampstand, that we should shine like cities on a hill, lit up at night. We should shine with the light of Jesus. Now Jesus, this Jesus, with the power to transform, to transfigure you, says to you and me this morning, anyone who loves me will obey my teaching. My Father will love them, and we will come to them and make our home with them. So if you love him, you are being transfigured from the inside out, from the bottom of your soul upwards. God the Father and Jesus the Son are not going to live in a dirty, dark home. So if they have come and made their home in you, you are being filled with the light of life, the light of heaven. And how fab is that? Isn't that incredible? You are being transfigured. Amen.